The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Don't look now, but the Red Sox have won two games in a row for the first time since it feels like forever. They beat the Mets tonight 2-0 behind what happened to be a strong bullpen performance. We'll get into why that had to be the case later on. And a couple of solo pops from Narvaez and Devers, and turns out that's all they needed. So good win for the Red Sox tonight. They've now got two in a row with a chance to sweep tomorrow with Crochet on the mound. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Terry Cushman. Terry, pretty solid win tonight all around.
Well, it's definitely solid from the pitching. Not the way we drew this series up. I mean, you've been getting killed in your rotation. Your bullpen's been up and down. Arguably you had your three best guys here starting. You still have Crochet still to go tomorrow. And I mean, if you told me yesterday afternoon before game one, you're gonna win both of these games, but you're only gonna score five runs, I'd be like, you're nuts. There's no way we won those games.
Yeah, especially tonight, you know, after the Buehler ejection, which we'll get into that a little bit later, but it looks real dicey because, you know, we talked about last night how the bullpen is already taxed heading into this point in the season. And now, you know, you were hoping for Buehler to give you at least five, maybe six, and he kind of gets robbed of that opportunity. So Cora and the team have to go to the bullpen earlier than they expect, but it all worked out. And luckily this Mets offense just is kind of in a funk right now. Not exactly sure why, but you'll take it, you know, for a team like that, as talented as them, to come into Fenway. You've already got the first two with a chance to sweep. Feels pretty good. So you mentioned strong performance from the bullpen, not so much from the lineup, really just two hits, and that's kind of all you had.
Yeah, I mean, you really have to start hitting. I mean, five runs this series, that's typically not going to do it. We need to be putting up at least five runs on a nightly basis for the most part. And you've got the guys in the lineup that can do it. You know, Jaron Duran has heated up. Abreu is kind of streaky. Rafaela was hot, but I think he's starting to simmer a little bit. So, but you've got Narvaez. His ceiling is just rising and rising and rising by the week. Like, this could be, I don't know. I'm jumping the gun probably, but this could be the fleece job of the century from the Yankees. And I was just thinking, I'm like, man, we seem to fleece the Yankees quite a bit. I mean, we got Adam Ottavino for free. That was just a salary dump for them. We got, let's see, Whitlock kind of in the Rule 5. So that was kind of a roundabout way to get him, but he came from New York. We traded Richard Fitz. And now we have Narvaez, who could be the best of all the moves, really. And when you look back, who did the Yankees ever get from us? They got Steven Drew about, 10 or 11 years ago. They got Alex Verdugo, which, I mean, that didn't kill him, but it wasn't super great. And who else did they get from us? There was one other trade recently. I forget who it was, but typically we send them borderline trash and we seem to get the better end of it.
Yeah, even a guy like Dom Smith, who, you know, very minor player, but was more of a contributor for us than he was for the Yankees when he went there. You know, we all kind of secretly dreaded it, right? Because that's a guy who contributed more than we thought, but he goes to the Yankees, doesn't do much, and they DFA him. So, yeah, it turns out that we do tend to fleece the Yankees quite a bit. And they can't really reverse that fortune on us. So at least so far, hopefully it stays that way. But even the Ellsbury one, that bit them in the ass at the end. So, you know.
Yeah, that was more free agency. But yeah, typically the players that go the other way over there, I mean, Boggs worked out pretty good, you know, a lifetime ago, it seems like. And Ellsbury was fine for a few years, but definitely not all seven that he was signed for. And yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with New York. You know, there's all these rumors that, you know, they could be the team that ends up with Skeens. I'm still highly skeptical that he does get moved. I mean, Ben Cherington is fired. If you trade a generational guy with 4 years of control left, I don't know how you survive that, but how do the Yankees acquire a guy like Skeens or really any frontline starter with just one top 50 prospect? One top 100 prospect in MLB. They don't have the farm anymore.
No, they really don't. And even some of their top farm guys, like a guy like Spencer Jones, who, you know, is always thrown around in these trade conversations when it comes to the Yankees, but he's like a high strikeout guy. He looks like a future platoon player, like can't hit lefties very well. So even their top prospects seem really flawed. Even, you know, Jason Dominguez, it took him forever to get to the big league level and actually start contributing. And that was a guy they've been talking about for the last 4 or 5 years. So I don't see how the Yankees have the prospect capital to get a Skeens deal done, unless Cherington really is that stupid and he just, you know, pulls a trigger too early. But there are other teams out there with better farm systems, better prospects. I mean, hell, even Baltimore could make a case that, you know, we have too many young guys and not enough room in our lineup, and they could put together a better trade package for a guy like Skeens than the Yankees could. So I think it's just typical. Yankees fans have been very delusional this past week. The Skeens thing is the first part. And then, you know, well, Juan Soto always wanted to be a Yankee. You know, that he never wanted to go to the Mets. Look how miserable he is there. He always wanted to be a Yankee. So Yankee fans are having themselves a little bit of a delusional week. So I don't see Skeens getting traded there. I really don't see him getting traded at all. But I agree with you. If he does, man, you got to fire that entire front office. That's atrocious.
With Spencer Jones, I don't know if it was someone in our war room or maybe I saw it somewhere else, but they were comparing him to Bobby Dalbec with the strikeout rate and being close to about 30%. So not a good comp.
No, definitely not. Not a prospect that you would trade away a guy like Paul Skeens to get. You know, that's a guy that you can get for much less if you really want him. So but keep in mind, you know, Pittsburgh does have some weird trade history. I mean, you know, you go back to the day they traded Austin Meadows and Tyler Glasnow for Chris Archer, and look how that worked out. Austin Meadows, unfortunately, is, I don't know if he's still in baseball anymore. I know he left for mental health reasons, but Tyler Glasnow, when he's healthy, is one of the best pitchers in the game, and Chris Archer flamed out there. So it's not out of the realm of possibility for the Pirates to do it, but it would be such a bad move. And I think it'd be bad for baseball too. Just sends another bad message to mid-market teams that you can never compete because the Dodgers and the Yankees and, you know, they're just always going to scoop up your talent. So hope it never happens. But speaking of Yankee mistakes, guys that they let go too soon, we saw an example of that tonight with Clay Holmes. I mean, this was a guy that was a reliever for them, signed with the Mets. The Mets, you know, are going to turn him into a starter. And he's been pretty good for them. He really only made, you know, two mistakes tonight, but otherwise pitched pretty well. So, again, the Yankees give up on a guy maybe a little too quickly. And, you know, they'd probably love to have a guy like Clay Holmes in their rotation right now. So it's good that the Red Sox were able to get to him.
Yeah, I'm just checking on the other. Well, it's not going so well for Jordan Hicks. He was the other kind of experiment with let's convert a reliever into a starter. But Hicks with the Giants has a ERA of north of 6 right now. So we'll see if he turns it around. But Holmes, yeah, I mean, held the Red Sox to 2 runs. I mean, most nights you're getting the W with that performance, but the Mets offense just seems to have gone quiet, and ours has been quiet, but, you know, maybe just a little bit noisier than them. And good enough to get the job done. Devers just been absolutely on fire since that meeting, you know. And I don't know. And let's talk about, we're kind of going backwards here, but may as well. Campbell has 3 days off. Been working out at first. The lineup was a little delayed tonight, so I'm thinking, oh, is that, could that be why? Are they really hemming and hawing about possibly putting Campbell at first? Is this going to be when we see it? And not only was the answer no, he wasn't playing second. He was out in center where he's not as good. I mean, he's okay, but if he's going to have a bad night defensively, it's probably going to be in center, not at second.
Yeah, I hated that because, and I'm not saying that I want them to put him at first base right away. Like with Campbell, I've said it before, it annoys me that they're toying with the kid as much as they are because, you know, he's barely a second baseman by trade, really. I mean, he's kind of bounced around the field his whole amateur career. It's really his bat that's carried him to where he is. And in spring training, I was advocating for, you have an empty hole at second base, just make him the second baseman and keep him there. Don't mess around with it. Just keep him at second base. You're going to need him there. And, you know, it was one game at second, then another at DH, and then they put him in left field. And it was like, they're going to keep screwing around with him. And I said to you guys in our chat room, like, they're going to Blake Swihart this kid if they're not careful. Blake Swihart was another top prospect with this team, was a catcher by trade. And I forget why the Red Sox did this exactly, but they just decided one day to put him out in left field and start, you know, training him as an outfielder as well. And he got hurt. He went to, I remember the play specifically. He was playing in left field at Fenway, went to go for a ball that was heading towards foul territory, of which there's very little in left field at Fenway. And he tried to slide into it, slid into the wall, hurt his ankle. He was never the same after that. He never got back on track. He was on the IL for a long time. And when he came back, they still weren't committed to him at catcher. They still were trying to screw around with his position, and he flamed out. And I just worry about, you put a kid like Christian Campbell in center field. He made a nice play tonight. I think it was off Brandon Nimmo. Nimmo drove one pretty deep to the track that Campbell got a good jump on and was able to track it down. But, you know, what if he slams into the wall and hurts his wrist or something? I mean, it's just, you know, that's more of a risk out there than it is at second base. And second base is a pretty, you know, for the most part, safe position. So I hated the 3 days off for the reset, and then you just put him in center field. Like, just put him at second base and keep him there. The screwing around with his position, like, they're going to screw the kid up mentally, and who knows, maybe they already have.
Yeah, and, you know, when he was working out at first, I'm thinking, okay, maybe they're just doing it to entice Devers. You know, maybe they're pitching it as, Raffy, look what you're making us do. He's taking ground balls at first. Why is he doing that? Come on, let's get serious about this. But if you're shifting Meyer over to second base in Worcester, I mean, clearly it's probably not a ploy. I mean, it does seem to be somewhat of a contingency plan here. And I don't even like that. Why does Meyer have to play second? Why can't Trevor Story play second? Why can't any of these guys just stay at their natural position? Why can't Campbell just stay at second and Trevor Story go to first? Trevor Story has the self-awareness to know that, oh my goodness, all these majorly talented kids are coming up. I'm not as good as them. I just need to be relevant. Yeah, give me a first baseman's glove. Let me try to save my career here. And I think in Story's case, you know, if he gets traded, you know, he at least takes his dignity with him, you know, because another team wants him and he's in a trade. But if he gets DFA'd, that's very undignified. And I don't think he wants that. I hate the way the Red Sox are handling everything here. They're not getting anything right. And there's other plan Bs, as I kind of outlined there. I mean, in a perfect world, Raffy goes to first, and then that really complicates it for Trevor Story. But the Red Sox offensively get better because you can do so many things with DH. You know, you can bring Yoshida back and see what he can give you, you know, for a handful of months here until at least the trade deadline. You can put him back in witness protection and go get you a, mid-level bat, you know, a Ryan Mountcastle type guy, like that was mentioned in the war room. But man, it's just, they are not getting anything right in this organization, and you need to protect your kids and you need to bring them into a culture in which they will thrive. And that's not happening right now. And with Devers, we have a Substack, by the way. I should get better at talking about that. That's a blog. I did publish an article earlier in the week, and how I would handle the Devers thing. I would book a conference room in a hotel, go get David Ortiz, Mike Lowell, Kevin Youkilis, Dustin Pedroia. I mentioned a couple other names. Put them in the conference room. March Devers in there. Have an intervention. Make sure he's the first baseman by the time everybody leaves that room, you know, and get it done. Just get it done. Put your foot down. I mean, all you have to do is point to the record. You know, we're probably pretty fortunate to be at 500 again, because if I thought we were going to lose 2 out of 3 in this Mets series, luckily at a minimum, it's going to be the opposite. And then you've got 4 against Baltimore, but with your worst pitching, Giolito is going to go in that series. At least one other guy that we probably don't want pitching will pitch. And so I'm not taking anything for granted, even though it's Baltimore, but this could have been the week the floor fell out. And you go in that clubhouse, whether it's Cora or Breslow or Angel Vasquez, who has managed all but he's managed 15 of the last 18 innings. Point to the record and say, guys, this is unacceptable. We should not be here. We're better than this. And we need to man up. We need to step up and start doing what we have to do to get well above 500. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah, and you're right about Story. He is rapidly heading towards DFA territory. And look, his contract saves him from that quite a bit, because he still owed 70 plus million. So it's going to make it tougher for the Red Sox to make that decision. So he's lucky he still owed that much money, because if it was anything less, if he was still owed like maybe under 30 million or something, he's probably getting DFA'd, because he just is lost. Anything above 93 miles an hour, he can't catch up to it. And if you've got a decent breaking ball, he's going to chase it in a 2-strike count. So the bat is, you know, the bat's not good. And look, his arm for shortstop is not good enough. We've known this for a while. So if I'm Trevor Story and I want to stay in the lineup and I want to keep playing every day to, you know, potentially keep my value somewhat high if I get traded or whatever, then I'm saying, why don't I just go to second and bring up Marcelo Meyer and, you know, figure out first base between Campbell, Devers, whatever. But if they're trying out Campbell at first, that's also a salute. You don't have to put Meyer at second. You can just move Trevor Story over there, you know? And look, I don't want Trevor Story in the lineup every day either, but you're kind of stuck with him. So why not put him in a better defensive position for your entire team? He's already played second base for you before. You know he can do it. So yeah, and Marcelo Meyer, we saw it in the spring. He's so smooth as a defender at shortstop. Your defense would get infinitely better. Now, whether Campbell can handle first base, I don't know. But look, Nick Sogard's over there and he's doing just fine. If Nick Sogard can handle it, I'm sure Christian Campbell, who is younger and probably a little bit of a better athlete, can handle it too. So my guess is that's what they want to do. But you're right about Devers. I mean, geez, you know, it feels like the entire team is kind of mocking him a little bit too, because now it's Christian Campbell, the young, you know, 21-year-old who's barely had a cup of coffee in the majors, who's willing to go over there, take 3 days off to practice first base. They did a video on the Red Sox Twitter account. It was a joking video, but it was like Greg Weissert taking ground balls at first base. Like, yeah. So like even some of his teammates are kind of ribbing him a little bit. Like, dude, it's not that hard. Like everyone says it's the easiest position to learn. You can totally do it. And you're just sitting there in the dugout with your arms crossed. Like, nope, I'm the DH. You told me to put my glove away, and that's that. It's like, it's kind of a joke at this point. So I hope that Campbell learns it, but it still scares me a little bit.
I think Breslow botched the whole infield alignment thing. Like, ultimately, it traces back to him. But Devers has had the soft path back there. You know, John Henry flew all the way to Kansas City. They had a meeting. you know, it was a serious situation. Raffy's a big part of the team. They had a meeting. They didn't demand he start taking grounders there tomorrow or the next day or even the next week. But, you know, they softened it for him and told him how important he was to this organization. So the fact that he's not doing it, it's more on him now, but he should have been the day he arrived at spring training. He should have been taking grounders at first.
Yeah, 100%. The fact that he won't even go over there and try it is just, that is on him now. And watching the team try and scramble and having guys like Nick Sogard and Christian Campbell take rounders there, it's a bad look for Devers, for sure. But at the same time, he's got his contract, he's got his money, so he doesn't care. And like, what are you going to do? Trade him? He's your best hitter right now. You can't. So he does have leverage, unfortunately. But
yeah, and you know, I was thinking, you know, because there's been a lot of trade Devers talk, but you know, Terry Francona would never be Terry Francona without David Ortiz in his lineup. Not a David Ortiz guy, literally David Ortiz, the guy who could handle the most imaginable pressure possible. The curse of the Bambino initially, and then just the weight that comes to playing in Boston and the pressure to win. If Ortiz isn't on that roster, Terry Francona, I mean, he would have managed for a while and perhaps with another team or two, but he's not Terry Francona without David Ortiz. And I don't think there's a path forward for Alex Cora to be, you know, a multi-championship winning manager without Raffy Devers. Devers is pretty close to that. You know, I mean, he's put the team on his back for much of the last week. Narvaez theoretically could have scored the only run tonight, but Devers in the very next at bat also crushed one to give you a 2-0 lead. So yeah, he's just too critical. But Buehler looked really good tonight before the hissy fits started. I put it more on the umpire. If it's a veteran pitcher versus a veteran umpire, it's the umpire for the most part.
Yeah, this one felt like an ump show. And I get what Maloney was saying. You know, he was sort of saying, look, the umpire's got his mask off. He's obviously upset, pissed at Buehler. And he kind of mentioned, like, you know, Buehler just kept walking towards him and he escalated it by doing that. But this was an ump show. I mean, the ump was kind of on Buehler all night. Like, he came out from behind the plate at one point to be like, you know, you need to look at the hitter. And like, umps will do that, especially if, you know, the pitcher's not doing it. It is the rule. Fine. But Estabrook, like, made a whole show of it. He didn't just go out there and do it and then put his mask back on. He, like, stayed out there for, like, just a couple of extra seconds just to really stare Buehler down and be like, look, I'm telling you again. And Buehler is, like, getting frustrated. He's like, yeah, I know. Let's go. Like, I want to pitch. So that was earlier. And then, you know, he calls a bad, you know, a pitch that should have been a strike. It was a ball. You know, Maloney said it was right down the middle. It wasn't exactly right down the middle, but should have been a strike. So Buehler's getting frustrated. And Estabrook he goes out there and starts yelling at him. It's like, what do you think's going to happen? The pitcher is getting frustrated. The pitcher's trying to, you know, win the game here. And you're holding him up over, you know, because what? He's taking a little extra long after a call that he disagrees with. It just, this to me was 75% ump show, 25% Buehler needs to understand, dude, you're not out of the fourth yet. Your bullpen's taxed. Don't antagonize the umpire because he's going to toss you. Like, he's looking for a reason to toss you. He's barking at you all night. Just go back to the mound, reset, let's go. Because this is not what the team needs right now. So Buehler does deserve a little bit of blame for that. He has to kind of be able to think a little bit more, you know, big picture, which is hard in the moment. I get it. But, you know, he's lucky the bullpen held it down, because if the bullpen went in just completely collapsed and, you know, we lose this game 10-2 or something, then you could look at Buehler and say, dude, like, we needed more out of you tonight. We don't need you getting tossed, you know, in the third inning. So glad it didn't cost them. I'm with you. I put it more on the umpire, but Buehler does deserve at least a little bit of blame there too.
Just an absolutely critical start. I mean, 4 strikeouts in just what, 2 2/3, something like that. Very encouraging. I mean, it was a couple ugly turns through that rotation, so we definitely missed him. Hopefully this is the last little blip that we have, and he can just kind of cruise through the rest of the season here. And you know, just absolutely critical. And Justin Slayton, you know, I don't think any of us expected Chapman to be the closer. I think Cora got it right. I mean, he's been the only guy consistently good. I think his only blown save might have been in extras with a ghost runner. I could be mistaken, but the dude's been nails. But all winter long, it was who's closing, Whitlock or Slayton? And I personally thought it would be Whitlock. I was like, roll it back to 2021. I think not being a starter, I think he could settle in. But man, I'm taking the L on that one. It's Justin Slayton. He's the guy I trust. Like, I've criticized, and I probably will for as long as he's on the team. I hate Whitlock's body language. He's always looks like he's having a panic attack. Slayton's the opposite. He goes out there, he's in command, he's ready to go. I like everything about him. If he gets knocked around one start, he can bounce right back and be lights out the next. And man, you knew you had a thin bullpen after last night, getting only 4 2/3 from Dobbins. And then the Buehler getting tossed was the worst case scenario. Like 2 2/3, that's all you got. How are you going to, with a taxed bullpen from last night, how are you going to get through it? And they brought him in what, the seventh, I think, with a runner on with one out, gets a double play real fast. 1 2 3 inning the next. 12 pitches, 5 outs, 12 pitches, just nails. I thought, why not? You're going to need guys for tomorrow. Bring him back out for the ninth. The guy's cruising. Save Chapman for tomorrow. They don't like pitching him two games in a row, but they did go to Chapman, and you know, is what it is.
Yeah, I eventually want to see Slayton as the closer as well. I think I've made it pretty clear how I feel about Aroldis Chapman. I still don't fully trust him, but I have to admit, I mean, he's got a sub-2 ERA right now, and last night, Chapman, it took him 7 pitches to finish the game off. Tonight, it took him 6. So he's, for whatever reason, he's just being super efficient right now, and he is keeping a stiff arm on Slayton or anyone else trying to grab that ninth inning role, because he's been good. I think Chapman's had like one tricky outing where, you know, things didn't quite go right, but apart from that, he's been nails in that ninth inning. So at the very least, your eighth and ninth inning pitchers are clear. It should be Slayton and it should be Chapman. The rest of it, you know, it's going to be who's in the trust tree at that moment, right? Like sometimes it's going to be Weissert, then he'll have a couple of bad outings, then it'll be Bernardino, he'll have a couple of bad outings. Like that's sort of the only issue, is that outside of Slayton and Chapman, the rest of the bullpen, you don't know what you're going to get out of those guys on a nightly basis. I mean, tonight Bernardino was really good, gave you an inning and 2/3, and you know, no runs allowed, obviously. So, and he's been looking pretty rough lately. So for Bernardino, that was big. But yeah, the rest of them, it's hard to create that bridge when your pitchers are exiting the game, you know, the fourth and fifth inning. So, you know, hopefully, like you said, hopefully tonight with the ejection, this was the last sort of blip on Buehler's radar, and he can start giving you at least 6 going forward, maybe 7 if he's really efficient. And hopefully tomorrow with Crochet on the mound, he can give you at least 7, something like that. You know, I don't want to tax him too much because he's already thrown so many pitches this year, but that is what you're hoping for at this point. And that's why he's your ace. That's what he's supposed to do. So
it would be a very unlikely sweep tomorrow, but, you know, I'm not saying we won't win tomorrow. I'm just saying from the beginning of the series to the end, you know, it's crazy that we have a shot to do it. And I don't think we've swept anyone this year yet.
That sounds right. Yeah, I don't believe we have. So tomorrow's matchup, as we said, we got Garrett Crochet going on the mound. This is another 6:45 start, I believe. Yes, it is. Yeah, 6:45. Garrett Crochet against Tyler McGill, who has not been good for the Mets so far. So feeling pretty good about it?
Well, I mean, we've been relatively cold despite winning, and I want to say he pitched pretty well against us last year in one of his starts. So I'm not going to feel good until we start getting consistent. But I mean, at face value, Crochet is the better pitcher and should give up the fewest runs over six or seven innings.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I feel as good as you can. You know, with this offense, it's just you're hoping for more than two runs, right, against a guy like McGill. But Crochet should have a pretty good time with that lineup. That Mets lineup just looks out of sorts right now. Soto's not himself. It, you know, Alonso's kind of carrying them right now. So take advantage of it. Take advantage of the Mets kind of being in a funk right now, and hopefully Crochet shuts them down and we can get the sweep. That would be a good way to go into the Baltimore series. So we will be with you guys tomorrow night to recap that game. So everyone, enjoy your night. We'll talk to you later. Take care.